Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West. Episode 41. I am one of your hosts, Nat, and with me, as always, is...
Pat!
Cat in hat.
Yay! So today we're going to chat about some news, critique some trailers, and discuss our top five superhero performances. But first, we're going to get to the top of the stack. Patrick, you want to lead us off?
Woo! This one was kind of a bittersweet top of the stack with me. This is Ms. Marvel 38, a five-year... edition, I guess. She's been out for 5 years. And this is G. Willow Wilson's final issue. And also Sana Amanat as editing, which are the two original creators. This is the character that brought me into comics, the writer that brought me into comics. So it's a little bittersweet to see her leaving. But this was a great issue. It's a one-shot. We have guest writers... Aside from Wilson, is Devin Grayson, Eve L. Ewing, Jim Zub, and Saladin Ahmed. And guest artists, Nico Leon, Takeshi Miyazawa, Joey Vasquez, Kevin Libra, Minku Jung, and Juan Velasco.
I will say I'm glad one of us can pronounce names.
I heard Saladin Ahmed is one of the guest writers. I'm like, oh, did they just give you a tease of the new creative team a little
bit? Yes, they did, and Minku Jung, too.
Okay.
So that's the very final story in this is written and illustrated by the new creative team on it, so it's a nice thing. This is kind of like a weird, like, real-life RPG, and, like, they keep beating the levels, and each level is a different creative team.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's really cool. It's well done. Like I said, it's just a one-off. There's definitely, like, some teary moments. Reading Wilson and Amanat's, like, outros to it at the end, I wasn't crying. You're crying at the end of it.
I actually have one question for you, is whether or not you cried, so now I know that we're good.
There was actually one part in Ahmed's story at the end where I got a little, like, spine chill, too, and ooh. I was like, ooh,
baby. I will ask, when my stupid question is when they were doing the RPG one, did you hear, like, the 8-bit level-up sound every time they leveled up?
So they actually do have, like, that sound effect.
And there's
one part that's, like, an old-school platformer, and one of the characters, there's, like, this little, like... the typing text, and it's like, oh, bip, 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 bip. And Miss Marvel's like, this text speed is just unbelievable.
Yeah, because you're already done reading the sentence before it's just writing, like, the next word.
Awesome.
So it was a great issue, and whew, I can't wait for Magnificent Miss Marvel #1 in the next issue.
Kat, what do you got?
I have the best comic of the week, that's what I got. But I've got Man and Superman. It was it was actually supposed to be written in, like, 2006.
Jesus.
There's, like, it's a 100-page special, and normally, like, the $9.99 price range is, like, I'm like, okay, this is worth $10. It's worth every penny. If you charge $15, I'd probably still pay for it.
Yeah, it looks like a graphic novel.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's almost
so basically it's basically set in the 90s, which makes it even better. but basically, it's the first time that Clark, not Superman, Clark goes to Metropolis, and he's trying to decide whether or not he would be useful as a superhero or a hero to help these people. Like, even specifically, like, when they're showing his mom making the costume, she doesn't call it a costume. She calls it a uniform.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that's,
like... it's awesome. I will say there was one critique at one point. I'm pretty sure I saw a camera cell phone. I'm like, they didn't have them in the 90s.
it's DC's 90s, right?
Like, so, yeah, right? So our writer is Marv Wolfman, and he said that he was hoping this was the best Superman story he's ever written. And I haven't read any of other stuff, but this is, like, one of the best Superman stories I've ever read.
Marv Wolfman, pedigree. You know, yeah, we love ourselves some Teen Titans, right?
And then our artist is Claudio Castellini. Oh my god, I love his Superman so much. He's got the forehead curl perfect. You don't even really see him in his Superman outfit in this entire thing. You just see him as Clark the whole time. At one point, he's wearing, like, a panty stocking over his head so people don't know who he is.
Oh, that's...
He won't wear the Superman costume.
What?
That's funny.
It's so good.
Does that have, like, the little, like a bit of a toe?
The knob thing? Yeah. That's awesome.
It was wonderful. I loved it so much. Worth the read. So if you haven't, and you have not read it, read it, especially if you're a Superman fan.
Nice. Top of the stack for me was Green Lantern number 4, written by Grant Morrison and art by Liam Sharp. Yeah, this book is still batshit insane. There's so much, like, deep sci-fi and, you know, I just... It felt like I was reading the darkest corner of Star Wars that they can't actually do. Like, it would not be appropriate for 12-year-olds to be reading this. There's sun eaters and suns and weird planets and death and a planet, or excuse me, a Green Lantern that is actually a sun. Like, yeah, this was nuts and gorgeous and... You know, once again, why I read comics. It was a little bit... It was hard to track the where the events occurred, and then it all came together beautifully. So, I mean, if you like the cosmic stuff, especially in the DC world, this is definitely the book.
I mean, I read that one, too. It's an acid trip. I'm like, where am I? Did I take drugs?
It's so good. And Liam Sharp's art just makes you lean that far into it,
too. Well, the crazy part is he still has, like, amazing panel art, even though it's so simplistic. So, I'm like, okay. We were reading it, and I'm like, wait, am I... Someone give me drugs?
No, I was just flipping through it here, and I always have to admire just his bordering. Like,
yeah,
his gutter work is just so, like, why spend so much extra time just for the borders, but it makes it work so much better.
It's really interesting, too, because, you know, he shines with organics, and this has almost a Giger feel to it, so it's like sci-fi with organics. It's very, like... Like the organic tech, I guess, is like the way to say that. Yeah,
yeah, so. Biotech, essentially, whatever you want to call that, I guess, you know? We're not quite
technology yet. That we don't understand because it's all like outer space and, you know, futuristic.
Yeah, that book is super outer space.
And super outer space.
Like, drug outer space.
when you say, that's the thing where you lose me with the cosmic space stuff, is when you say there's a Green Lantern that's a sun, I'm just like... All right, that's a little too big for me to comprehend. I like to think about the big things in life, but maybe more metaphorically.
I mean, it's a sun. I don't know how much bigger you can get.
if you're going to have something that has powers based on light, the sun is obviously your choice, right? anyway, we're going to move on to some trailer discussions. I'm going to do this in reverse, actually, from the order that we had. Endgame Super Bowl trailer. I just really wanted to mention the fact that this is how you do a trailer correctly, is you set the tone for the movie, you give us a feeling for where the character's states are, but you don't give us any of the plot.
Yeah.
You let us be drawn into it, and it felt post-apocalyptic, which I'm glad they're actually going to do this sort of story.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That was the best part of the Super Bowl for me.
Yeah.
So, was watching this trailer.
I think the best part
trailer.
Of the Super Bowl for a lot of people is actually watching this trailer.
I mean, it was a, I just, well, I didn't watch the Super Bowl. I don't need, I have other things to do.
that's understandable.
Comics to read.
Well, comics to read.
I hate
video
being that person, but
play.
They're like, Maroon 5 is the halftime show. And I'm like,
yeah, let's not even talk about that.
Yeah.
And I kind of slowly just walked out of the room.
Yeah.
I looked back once and I was like, nah, and walked out.
Let's move on before I have something to say about it.
And then we had the Frozen 2 trailer. I was like,
sorry, you said critiquing, and all I thought is, I think you mean laughing.
Patrick, you seem to enjoy this trailer, so what do you think?
I thought it was interesting, and it might be because I watched it late last night on, you know, and I might be just have been sleep deprived, and my sleep deprived brain was like, whoa.
See, your sleep deprived brain is pretty nice. Mine's like, fuck this, it's terrible.
No, I'm interested to see, because I think you were just talking about, you know, giving a tone but no plot away. It's exactly what this trailer did. I don't know what is going to happen in this new one, but tonally, I'm very interested now, because the tone of that trailer was very different from the first movie, so I'm curious to see where they go with it now, especially.
I don't know why there's a Frozen 2. That's basically where I start.
That's for me. They're fighting that hurdle as well. Like, why do we need a sequel to Frozen? You know, there's a very nice complete story,
as well as all the stupid stuff that's like the rumor surrounding it. I'm like, I honestly, I'll hit this point later after we talk about something else. But I don't understand. Because they said they were going to do a Frozen 2 in the first. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you need another one? And I personally love the actress that plays Elsa. I can never pronounce her name. Beautiful voice. That's really honestly probably... That's why I like the soundtrack so much, is because of her. Because she's just a great performer. She's just great at singing.
Does she do the singing too as well? It's yeah, not she like actually the classic has, Disney dub.
No, she actually does it. She's nice. She's the actress from Wicked on Broadway.
Oh, cool.
But I don't understand why I need a second one. I was fine with the first one. You don't need to come... I just feel like I'm being beat to death with things that I don't want.
I mean, why would you need an Incredibles 2?
That would make sense.
That movie ended on a cliffhanger.
But why would you need, you know, The Dark Knight? Why do you need any second movie?
The Dark Knight also ended with something more.
Yeah, the one
Frozen
that all those...
was sewn up. Right,
Frozen was a complete story.
Why do, why do you need Toy Story 2 then?
I didn't want
Toy Story 2, but it turned out to be good.
I don't want a Toy Story 4, so...
Oh, that's a whole different
thing. I didn't want three,
and it was awesome.
So, I have to speak my piece about the Frozen trailer, and it isn't that I wasn't excited about it. Once again, don't feel like I need this movie. What I saw was really bad character animation and really good effects animation. And the really bad character animation, for me, as I was watching it, I was like, oh, we live in a world that's post-Incredibles 2 and post-Into the Spider-Verse. The bar's been raised. This looks like garbage because of what we've seen now.
And that's the other thing, though, is, like, the first movie looked beautiful, yeah. But now you have to compare it against those other ones, yeah. So it's different.
The bar is raised.
Yeah. No, that's very true.
That's enough about the cold stuff. Let's move into the desert here and talk about...
Is it desert in the fact that there's nothing?
The deserts of Agrabah in the Aladdin trailer. Why did they cast Jafar instead of casting that actor to play Aladdin? Because that was about as unthreatening as a performance in 5 seconds and, you know, the most dialogue in the trailer that I've heard. That his I'm sorry for this actor because I think that was... I hope that's not the tone for the rest of the movie. I don't understand.
Well, Jafar isn't that really supposed to be, and I'm just, you know, sort of being devil's advocate here because I thought it was garbage too. I'll just throw that out. But, you know, he's not an entirely threatening person, like, especially in the beginning. He's more of, like, the sleazy, sly, creepy guy.
No, he's manipulative, and that's the whole point to his character.
Yeah, but he's not, like, overtly menacing, at least in the beginning.
In animation school, Jafar is actually taught as the prototypical villain and how you do it correctly in animation through design, voice acting, and
I will say this, the guy...
The
guy who created Jafar actually based him off of Maleficent. It's pretty... Yeah, his cast him and everything. It's
really?
Yes.
That makes so much sense.
It's really awesome.
He's basically a more animated Maleficent.
Yeah, actually, I'll give you that one. Yeah.
I don't mean that in cartoon.
We are running long. We got the blue elephant in the room. What was that, genie? Like, you want to talk about not going full on? That was like the perfect representation of not pushing things far enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what to say. It's like this. It's bad CG. Why is it trying to replicate Will Smith? Why are you not? You have the opportunity to make the genie scary, and they completely went the other direction. He's not scary at all. It doesn't even look like a genie. And why does he use modern colloquialisms? Like, this movie feels very much like a period piece based on what they were showing us thus far.
I don't think that's a fair thing because they're basing it off of the old movie, and that's why I've hit this point where I'm like, you gave me this once. I don't want it twice for another movie. If you're just going to rehash all my childhood movies, I'm just going to go watch my childhood movies.
Yeah.
But with the like modern-day colloquialisms, Robinson Williams did the same thing. And they sound like they're not drifting super far.
So
hey, this place needs a highway. I don't know what the fuck a highway is.
So I'm with you on that. Why are we not doing something different, too?
My thing is like, you can have this set and so... You could do it from the perspective of Jafar. You could have done it from the perspective of the genie. You could have explained the genie story. In the very end of the movie, he comes out of the lamp for Aladdin, but you gave me the same movie, and you basically walked into your vault, pulled this out, blew dust off it, threw it down, said, we're doing this again. And I said, fine. I don't really want to watch it.
And that's kind of what they've been doing with all their live-action movies.
Maleficent was different because they took it from her perspective. So that one I appreciated.
Well, but that's different because that's its own, like, standalone thing. Like, they didn't take the Maleficent movie from back in the day and remake it. They took Sleeping Beauty, Is this Sleeping Beauty?
Yes.
Yeah. And then they redid it, like you were saying, from a different perspective, and it's a different story.
If I'm fine with you rehashing old things, but I'm not fine with, like, Beauty and the Beast once, thanks for that. That was cool. You're not going to do it again, and you want to do it for Lilo and Stitch, and you want to do it for The Little Mermaid. The Little Mermaid, I will say, they talked about casting Lady Gaga as Ursula at that point. I have absolutely no choice but to be there, but you're going to do it again and again and again and again and again.
But yeah. No,
I'm just kind of like, oh, thank you.
I now have a conspiracy theory that they're putting this movie out before Lion King, so it just, like, destroys our expectations, so Lion King has to just be good.
Or decent.
Yeah.
All right at that point. I was hoping with this Aladdin movie.
The bar is so low that decent is amazing.
I was honestly hoping with this Aladdin movie, because they started casting a lot of, like, Indian actors and actresses. Like, that was a big debate whether it would be more, like, Middle Eastern or, like, Desi, subcontinental stuff. And so I was hoping they would just go straight Bollywood with this, honestly.
That's a movie I would see.
I know, right? Aladdin, Bollywood presents Aladdin. That would be the...
And then you get Will Smith as the genie, and now I'm way in. Because I mean...
People keep posting the picture of him from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with the blue spray paint can.
I'm
like, that's what happened.
All right. We got to move on, because we are definitely long on time right now. Going to do some quick hits here. Zelda Link's Awakening Remastered was announced with a little quick trailer. That looks amazing. We have DC canceling Second Coming from Vertigo. This is the Jesus and Superman buddy story.
I will say that they are trying to find a different publisher to put it out. So
hopefully they can do that.
I'm assuming they're going to attempt to try to go to Image, because that's probably the best place that'll probably do it.
Batman Damned number 3 is postponed until May 2019.
I thought.
I'm a little salty. As whatever they need to finish it.
I'm more concerned about editorial stuff on that one.
Wait, what?
Well, I mean, why would you push it back if it seems like the story has already been done? It's more probably content is the issue, so...
You think he tried to slip another Batawang in there?
Maybe.
I mean, I'm sad. I mean, but at the same time, I'm like, if it's gonna make it better, I'm not gonna be angry about it, but if you're talking editorial stuff to edit it down, because we don't want another Batawang incident.
Yeah. The Batawang incident. That seems like a really great, like, topic for a documentary.
Maybe it's Catwoman's cat.
Oh God! All right, we're moving on from that.
Catwoman's real cat.
Unfortunately, we're gonna have to skip a lot of stuff today. We're gonna talk about Marvel and Hulu's 4 animated series that will culminate in The Offenders. So Marvel Studios and Hulu have come together to do adult-themed animations. We have some really odd characters. Hitmonkey, who I have zero familiarity with, but it's being written by Josh Gordon and Will Speck, or their executive producers on that particular miniseries.
I think this is just producers at this point, but maybe writers?
I know that a few of the names we'll go over are writers.
All right.
Tigra and Dazzler... I know Dazzler is an X-Men character.
Oh, yeah, I know
she's
who that
a disco
is.
Singer.
Yeah, she's a disco singer.
I am so game. I hope that's set in the 70s.
Right, me too. And Chelsea Handler is executive producer / writer on that series, and that's just interesting, like really cool. We have MODOK, who is a classic Iron Man villain who is basically a floating head in a chair, like a mechanical chair.
They make fun of him in West Coast Avengers.
They make fun of him a lot.
He was Gwynpool's original employer when she came to the Marvel Universe.
Makes sense. He was the head of AIM for a while. So
yeah,
like,
the head.
Ha-ha! I just stabbed myself in the leg with
it. But Patton Oswalt is signed on as a writer / executive producer, whether that means showrunner or not.
Patton Oswalt, I love that guy.
I love that guy, too. I really want him to play the Penguin, like, real bad.
He did in that Funny or Die sketch.
He did, that's true. Do it again. Do a live, full live action. And then Howard the Duck, which is a character who has appeared in Guardians of the Galaxy and technically the first Marvel film ever made, Leah Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe that was a Lucasfilm production, which also makes it even that much weirder.
Was it?
Yeah.
Because that was, like, 82 or something?
Something like that.
It was early 80s.
But, yeah, he's a trash-mouthed duck man.
Detective.
Detective. Perverted detective.
So he's basically Detective Shrimp. with a lot more.
Detective Chimp is a serious character.
I know.
Howard the Duck is not serious. And that one is being spearheaded by Kevin Smith. What I have to say about this is we just live in a really fucking odd time right now. Like, I'm all over these. I don't know what to expect from these, but I'll be watching them.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, what are these?
Yeah.
I mean, we keep saying that they should just take random characters and make shows or movies with them, and yeah. Here we go. Random.
I also think this points really positively to Disney not shying away from adult content. Because this is post the Disney-Fox merger, so this will be on... This may be the test market for Hulu being where R-rated content goes. So Disney Plus will have things that are all family-friendly, and Hulu will have multiple genres and be able to deal with more mature content.
Nice. I like that idea.
Me too. I actually think it would be really good to bundle the two together, and like when you log on, you select the two channels, like which one you're going for at that moment in time.
Interesting. Yeah, and then you have to be like 18-year-old.
Yeah. You just have your code to type in if you're going to go into Hulu. Mm-hmm. For parents, or just keep it unlocked.
Parental lock, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Nice. I like that idea. Cool.
Cool. Well, we're going to jump right into our big discussion, because we are tight on time, and I want to get into this. You know, everything else we can hit about later. You know.
Cool. Well.
So we're going to talk about our five favorite, or our top five, live-action superhero performances. The caveat in this is that there are specifically heroes, anti-heroes.
We're going to
do a little bit of blurring the lines there. No, no Heath Ledger Joker in this conversation. We're not going to talk that.
I feel like that would be an argument.
Yes. So we're going to try to do this as a ranking. I'm going to go ahead and start us off with my number five. And I'm going to go with Charlie Cox as Daredevil in the Daredevil Netflix series.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I remember when I first heard this casting and started looking him up, I was like, the British guy from Stardust? Well, that seems weird.
He's British?
It's like when you find out someone's Australian, you're like, oh, wow! Right?
Those damn immigrants coming over and stealing our jobs.
Whatever, I'm pretty sure they go looking for them.
For me, the performance lives on the fact that we believe that he's blind, and then we also believe that he can kick somebody's ass. You know, like, there's no level or no point in the story where you're like, I don't believe that he can do that. It's like, no, I believe it all. I think he's honest. I think he's sexy. I think he's brutal. He feels real to me, and he feels like a fantasy character at the same time. I think
Man
all
Crush
of that
Friday.
Works. I'm going to rock that 5 o'clock shadow that he's got with the red glasses, too. And I feel like he stepped right out of the comic book page, not only just as Matt Murdock, but when he's especially in the black bandages suit. Like, it looks straight out of John Romita Jr.
I love his performance. Every time I watch him on screen, it actually takes me out of the show because of how good he is, especially when he's looking at people, or air quotes, looking at people, because he does it's so perfect. I'm literally watching, sitting there watching the show like, you are such a good actor playing Daredevil right now. Oh wait, I'm watching Daredevil. Go back and watch Daredevil.
the head tilt when he's listening, you know. Yeah, I just did a head tilt whip.
And he kind of does like the like swaying thing too a little bit, like very, very subtly, sort of, yeah, going back. I don't know. The subtleties, I can't imagine his method.
Right. It's also important to me to recognize the fact that he is holding his own against a pretty star-studded acting cast, especially against Kingpin.
Oh, my God.
You know, like dealing with, oh, my God, name just... D'Onofrio, Vincent D'Onofrio, as Kingpin.
Cricket?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's great. It's a good one.
What about your number five, Pat?
Number five for me would have to be Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool. And this is
okay. Kat,
who's your number five then, Kat?
Mine's Margot Robbie for Harley Quinn.
Ooh.
Because, honestly, the only person I ever think of for Harley Quinn is Arlene Sorkin, every time. And everybody tries to emulate her, which is a mistake. Because you can't emulate it, I'm sorry. No matter how hard you try, it's nigh impossible.
I think that's really like one of the joys of Margot Robbie's performance, is that she's doing her own version of
Not even that. She takes just enough Harley Quinn, makes it more adult, which is funny because the animated series has so many hidden adult jokes in it, makes it more adult, but on top of that takes like bits of Arlene Sorkin and puts it in hers, but puts her own twist on it and makes Harley Quinn her own character instead of trying to emulate her.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really curious, like, for October to see if Hayley Cuquill tries to do the same thing.
Right.
From seeing Margot Robbie's performance, because she's the only acceptable Harley Quinn to people at this point.
She even has that bit too where she drops some psychiatrist lines too. She was easily the most well developed character in Suicide Squad.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I'm an adult. Every time she turned around, I was like, wait, movie, wait.
I made that joke after it came out that Margot Robbie's ass was actually the third main character aside from Margot Robbie and Will Smith,
because
it had more screen time than most of the other members of Suicide Squad.
I'm not gonna lie, you might be able to time that. True.
It definitely had more screen time than
Slipknot.
Yeah, it was
yeah, if there is a bright spot to Suicide Squad, it was definitely Margot Robbie.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, that's the one part of the movie I'm like, you are Harley Quinn.
Yep.
You did well. I can't take that away from you.
For me too, it's the only acceptable, like, of the Marion Drews style Harley Quinn performance. Mm. Like, I don't generally like that sort of version of the character, but I liked hers.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
No. Next.
Yeah. All right. So my number four, this is going to be no surprise to people who know me, but Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange.
Oh, that's a good one.
For me, there's zero wasted effort. Every movement that he does feels prepared. It feels studied. It feels like he's been through all of the books and learned all of the spells. Everything feels like it is... He plays the doctor. You know, he actually plays that person that is... enveloped in the world and the science that he is studying, and that he approaches the mystic arts the same way. He makes you hate his arrogance, but at the same time you love the way that his character works. His subtlety too, I think, is something that people don't discuss enough. There's specifically a scene in Doctor Strange where he's in Tibet and he's rolling his hands across a wall because he can't really feel anything. So he's trying to feel from his fingertips. And it's just like this subtlety in that moment when you have such a broad and big character.
The way he shakes his hands, I was actually... I rewatched it when it came on Netflix a bit ago. Mm-hmm. And I was actually sitting there, like, watching his hands shake. And I was, like, trying to do it myself. Like, the jerkiness, mm-hmm. the subtlety that he gets out of it. It's really hard. It's really hard to do. And he does it perfect. Like, if you try to do it, it looks like... It doesn't look...
It doesn't work.
Yeah. And he does it so well.
I just can't be a surgeon either way.
There's another thing, and this is going to be repeating in my list, is being the best part of the films that they're in. I think he's the best part of Doctor Strange, and for me, he's the best part of Infinity War. And Infinity War has a lot of people in that film, so to stand out in that is pretty big. It's pretty big.
Once again, those damn Brits coming over and stealing our jobs.
Right. Also, Benedict Cumberbatch himself seems nothing like the character of Doctor Strange, so I like that dichotomy.
Oh,
like, it's like completely different from each other.
The accent he does, too, is like, I joke about it, but it's perfect, especially for the character. And then, like, his mouth, too, like, the way he, like, holds his jaw is...
It's just like a level of confidence and arrogance, you know? Like, he holds himself to a higher standard than everybody else.
That's a great one, yeah.
All right, Pat, number four?
Well, number four for me, and this is just, I don't even know what to say, but it's Will Smith from Hancock. Hancock, I love that movie, and he does one of the best superheroes I've ever seen. He plays the perfect washed-up Superman, like he's, oh my god, waking up on like the park bench and with like a brown bag bottle, and
yeah,
the part when he throws the kid up in the air and is talking to the guy.
Oh god,
he does this such a he's a great actor. He's such a veteran. We all know this, but to see him in like a comedic superhero role. Is awesome.
It's interesting too. That movie was very much ahead of its time for like the type of storytelling it portrayed. But he is the driving force behind that film.
Like, yeah,
that's what makes the movie work is Will Smith's performance. You believe every aspect of it, and you want to hear this guy's story. It's like, what the hell happened to him that led him here?
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, he does. Oh man, it's great, and it's a good movie too. It's pretty underrated. If it had come out 5 years after it did, it would be way more popular.
Probably. But,
you know, it was right before the superhero train. Anyway, I won't get too salty about that.
So for my number four, it's Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, Iron Man.
You can't.
I mean, I hate Tony Stark as a character, but I mean, he does it perfectly. Like, you can honestly not thank Tony Stark and Robert Downey. I'm pretty sure he's just playing himself, honestly. If I had to take a guess, I'm fairly certain he's playing himself.
That's why he's not on my list.
Really?
I think for me, it's not so much it's a performance, it's just that he got perfectly cast. It's like he was just the guy who was already the kind of alcoholic, washed-up dude that came out and succeeded later in life as being something bigger. I love his performance, don't get me wrong, but that was why I dropped it off the list.
Anytime I ever think of Iron Man, I'm like, oh, Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., there's... Good luck replacing him. Anybody who tries to come and replace him later, good luck.
He almost made my list too. Just once again, the mannerisms, like the way he just talks fast and then stops and then you can tell he is trying to pull you in because he has such an ego and he wants you to pay attention to him.
Yeah,
but that's also Robert Downey Jr.
The level of multitasking that he's able to do in sequences too, you really believe that he's so smart that one particular thing can't hold him. One thing at a time is not enough to hold his attention.
Well, that's
he needs to be doing multiple things.
That's kind of the thing too, is I'm not saying that Robert Downey Jr. is dumb, but I don't think he's that smart either.
That's fair.
That one, the fact that he plays a genius so well, I'm like, I know you've had lots of drugs and alcohol. You cognitively, you might not be up top, but damn, you play good.
I like the fact that the number four spot was all the assholes too. Hancock, Doctor Strange, and Tony Stark.
That's
a good number four spot here.
Anyway, we'll take us out to number three now.
All right.
Good or people.
Asshole. So there are performances in my mind that transcend the comic book origins.
Whoa.
And I think Chris Evans as Captain America does just that. I think he's more interesting than the comic book character. He feels timeless, and we actually get representation in that, in the fact that we've actually seen him in different time periods. He plays an Indiana Jones type character in one movie, a super spy in another, and then a symbol in another film. You know, he manages to do so many layers. He's comedic, he's a teacher, he's a leader, he feels selfless. He's the heart of the Avengers, and he's oftentimes the best part of the movies he's in.
I will say this, and I might get people yelling. I loved him as Johnny Storm. I did. Yeah. He's walking outside and talking to the chick, and he starts did you want to come see me in the shower? And he starts heating up, and the steam's coming up. I'm like, you play a good dick.
Well, that's the thing, is you compare that performance to what he does as Captain America, and Captain America is just absolutely lovable. You care about what happens to him. And you look at the Winter Soldier, his performance in that, of having to turn away from everything that he thought he believed in and try to find something new, it's brilliant. I'm going to see, it's sad to see him go, but I'm glad we got the movies with him that we did.
But I'd love to see him walk away.
He's no Charlie Cox, okay?
He's really good looking.
Yeah, no, that's true. He does do great, and you're absolutely right. I'm so much more interested in Captain America films than I am in comics most of the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's great, and he's always the de facto leader. He walks into the room and it might be a directorial trick or whatever, but he everyone stops talking and sees what he has to say.
Yeah, I think about that scene in the Avengers movie, the first one, when they first really assemble and he gives everybody their roles, and that the line delivery of Hulk smash. He overcomes a really silly costume to deliver a very honest performance.
I mean, I will say this, how he reacts with the shield is pretty good too.
Oh yeah,
because he just doesn't pay attention to it.
Yeah,
it hits it back in the hand like it's supposed to or whatever. He just doesn't pay attention to it.
It's part of the performance. Mm-hmm. He embodied the weapon as part of the character.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's
why it all works.
Yeah, I'll straight up say I want to see that shield in the new movie, and if I don't, I'm going to get salty.
And his motorcycle, too.
Yeah.
So iconic.
There is, like, there's a weird... He does the iconography of the character so well. For me, yeah, he's almost changed what my view of illustrating the character, too, is. It's, I don't know if it looks like Chris Evans, but... Or,
Yeah. Nice.
I dug the beard.
That's a good one. I'm, you know, me over here with my beard. I'm like, yes, beards are cool.
Yeah, they're so great, guys.
I know, Kat, you have a great one yourself. I didn't mean that. Oh, joke, not insult, I swear. Anyway, well, I guess my number three would have to be Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones. Nat mentioned this to me before, and I had another one on my list, but I just had to knock that person off because, oh, Jessica's just so good. And she steals the show. Like, if you're talking about, like, stealing the show, like, even when she's in The Defenders, every single scene that has her in it is so much better. The best scene to me in the whole Defenders series is when they're on the train and she just, like, grabs the guy's beer. She's looking at it and, oh, man.
I don't know. I like the line where she's like, I don't remember what it was, but he did something. She's like, I'll hit you so hard, you'll see.
Yeah. And she's, because she's sassy, she's smart, she's, like, you can see her working through, like, the detective process. Like, right. It's not... She makes you believe that she's a private investigator. Like, like her mannerisms, once again.
Yeah.
Just the way she, like, looks for things and how paranoid she always is, you know? Like, looking over her shoulder so much. It's like a nervous tic at this point. And then, like, yeah, she's sarcastic. She's, you know...
The way she uses the camera, too, like, physically being the private investigator, like, the camera is part of her. It's part of her character. We talked about the shield just now. It's like, you feel like she's been behind that lens a lot, and she knows exactly where to get those shots. It's, yeah, there's a lot of subtlety to her performance besides the fact that it's so, you know, it's so big and dry comedy. It's like she still manages to play small moments in a very believable way.
And yeah. I think, and yeah, like, you know, like, talk about her alcoholism at one point. Like, it's a joke sometimes, and then at the other time, it's one of the most cutting, like, commentaries in the whole show. And the way she plays it, she does almost both at the same time. And you're like, haha, look how she, you know, is chugging this bottle of whiskey. That's funny how long she's chugging it for. Oh, wait, it's because she, you know, has so much trauma that she needs a half a goddamn bottle of whiskey to get through the afternoon.
I think she elevates other characters, too. I think the one-on-one scenes that she has with other actors, I think she raises their performance. I think she's so good. I think her and Tennant was just, like, what a perfect pairing for acting.
Oh, my goodness. That's just... Wow.
Absolutely brutal, but fantastic.
Yes. You go, Kristen Ritter.
Yay!
Anyway, take it away.
Castron, Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool. He's number three. Even in his original rendition of Wade Wilson in the Wolverine movie where they ruined him, he was still... That was Deadpool. He just... And I mean, even now, it's I'm pretty sure he did Detective Pikachu so he could make fun of himself in the third Deadpool movie.
That's true.
Like, if that doesn't come up in that movie, or I see some sort of, like, weird looking, you know, Pikachu dressed in a Deadpool outfit, I'm gonna be disappointed.
That would be really hilarious, actually. Or, like, a wrestling mask that Pikachu's wearing that just happens to be, like, the Deadpool mask.
Right.
Yeah, you know he's going to do something for Deadpool 3, because that hasn't been rumored yet even, but, you know.
I mean...
Whatever.
You know, he doesn't take himself seriously, which is perfect for Deadpool, because, I mean, that first movie was... That movie was brutal, like, on so many levels, and I can appreciate as an actor him saying, do not take your children to this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he even came out and said, because I guess people were saying... about how it was too inappropriate for kids. He's like, it's rated R.
Yeah.
It's a superhero movie, and that's like one of the opening lines is, oh, you thought this would be a superhero movie?
No, it's a love story. Come on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but
Happy International Women's Day.
I still say that all the time. Oh, my God. I think, yeah, for me, especially reading the comics, too, I can only read it with his voice and cadence in my head, too, mm-hmm. like the way he talks about it. What is it going to be? A sullen silence or a snarky remark?
I saw that movie 4 times in the theater and laughed my ass off every time. I love that movie.
Yeah. I love both of those films. I actually think, you know, talking about transcending the comic book versions of the characters, I think he's better than the comics.
Yes.
I think that his, you know, formulating the voice behind reading the comics now, I still think his delivery is just more enjoyable. I'd rather watch 15 Deadpool movies than have to read more Deadpool books.
I mean, you said, I've read some pretty good Deadpool books, though. Like, there was one where he was literally a pirate and he lost his leg, and he, number one, his navigator was blind. And then he made a peg leg out of a plunger from the bathroom, and the blind chick asked him, are you using the plunger from the bathroom? No! As he, like, walks away.
I'm reading Black Panther and Deadpool right now, and that's pretty good. But, I mean, I feel like, especially since the movies came out, all the comic book versions have just been trying to recapture that magic of Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool.
And that's fair. That's good synergy. I like that.
Yeah.
I own both of those films, so. As much as I'm not a huge fan of the Deadpool character, I do love Ryan Reynolds in the role. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number 2s.
Number 2s! All right, this is probably on multiple lists here, but we'll make sure that we lead it off. She's our warrior queen.
Oh, no way.
She's our goddess. No, Gal Gadot, yep. Wonder Woman, is my number two
as well.
I knocked her off for Kristen Ritter, actually.
Ooh.
That was the tough decision that you made me make.
I'm going to go in... Actually, why don't you talk about your number two, and then we'll spend some time talking mm-hmm. about the Wonder Woman together.
Oh, you guys... Okay, you
yeah, they're both... Yeah, Wonder I don't Woman know thing. How that happened.
Nice. Yeah, my number two is actually Brandon Lee from The Crow. Yeah. And this isn't just because of the whole story around it, you know, him dying in the movies. I know that always makes actors, you know, more famous afterwards. But damn, his performance. He is gritty. He is maniacal. He is exactly what you would imagine if Batman had, like, the Joker's personality.
I'm actually starting to cry right now, for real.
Really?
There are elements of that performance. That movie stuck with me in a weird way as a teenager. I just thought of the line, "It can't rain all the time." And his delivery in... You believe his love in that movie so much that it drives the rest of the story. And...
Goddamn, you're making me start to tear up. Yeah,
no, and that's not joking. I am actually tearing up.
I'm going to be that jerk in the room and be like, huh, the only female's not crying.
have you seen The Crow?
I actually haven't.
If
I wanted to cry myself to sleep at night, I just have to think about some other things.
It's not like a sad movie, though.
No.
It's a dark tale of revenge.
I have to be really careful with movies like that, though. They can put me in a very bad mindset.
Morphine is bad for you.
Oh my God. Yeah, and his manic, like, state in the whole movie. Yeah. He does it so well. Like, people talk about, like, Heath Ledger's The Joker as, like, one of those staples for that. And people need to put Brandon Lee up there.
I'm fairly certain that bringing up Heath Ledger, at least for a lot of people, would be an honest argument.
I think Heath Ledger actually looked to The Crow for part of his performance.
I would not be surprised at all, because it's so familiar. Oh. Oh, my gosh.
I might actually forgo watching too many episodes of Dragon Prince today and actually watch The Crow now after you said that. It's been a while since I've seen it.
I haven't seen it in a minute either. And once again, it was one of those that weirdly stuck with me as a teenager.
It's all him, too. Like, all the lines that are popping into my head are his one-liners. And, like, is that gasoline I smell? Ah, it's such a good performance. Oh, I'm actually kicking myself for not having that on my list. I really am. That's a really great.
Oh yeah.
In the back of my mind, I'm like Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's get to the positive one.
R.I.P. Brandon Lee.
Oh, he would have been huge.
So, fun fact: when they originally cast her as Wonder Woman, I was actually pissed.
As most of us were.
I was legitimately pissed. I was like, she is too small for this role. She is not...
Too small?
Yes. Wonder Woman is an Amazon.
How tall is she?
She's actually shorter than...
She's 5'11"?
I thought she was shorter than that. I thought she was fairly short.
I think she's actually tall for...
For females, I think she is tall, but I think the chick from Deadpool that they used when she smashed...
Gina Carano?
Yeah, I'm like, that was more of my envision for Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
I think... That freaking mass.
If our biggest criticism for the character is that she should be about 8 inches taller and about 50 pounds heavier,
it's a little unfair, but at the same time, because I thought when
she's
I
she's 5'10".
She's 5'10".
Is she really? I thought, and I read stuff that she was like 5'6", and I'm like, okay, I'm taller.
Well, it's because she's standing next to Affleck, who's 6'3", and Cavill, who's 6'1", so she looks small.
I mean, I guarantee she's wearing like 9-inch heels. Anyways, so I was originally really upset, and the other part was, is it's like her physique was super feminine, which Wonder Woman is to like a point. Mm-hmm. I was just really salty about it because I'm like, you're just going to pretty lady. And then she dropped down in Batman vs Superman, and that was the best part of the entire movie for me. She sold me right then and then. I'm like, that's Wonder Woman. I'm done. I have no arguments anymore. I literally got excited when she dropped down. Because she had, you're Wonder Woman. I can't argue this anymore.
That's once again, it's like the best part of the movies that they're in. She's the best part of Batman v Superman. She's the best part of Wonder Woman. She's the best part of Justice League.
Yep.
She's the best in what she's in.
Hit the ground, and they had that camera angle where you see her eyes drift over from the shield. I was like, holy shit, you're Wonder Woman. Exactly, and her theme is amazing.
So for me, it's kindness, power, grace, wisdom. Like, all of it is there. It's all in her performance. It's all in her eyes.
Well, we also have to point out, she's like an actual female badass.
Yeah.
She's been in the military. She's part of that is why there are some young girls who will never get to see her performance, but she's an actual female badass.
I think because she's from Israel.
Yeah, she's Israeli.
Is it correct? Yeah, it's mandatory actually in Israel to
but
be
at
in
the same time, but I mean, like, it's mostly at the same time, like, female badass.
Yeah,
like, incarnate.
I think that one of the things, like, her performance already feels timeless.
Oh yeah,
and she is, you know, she's very young still. So there's a lot left to go.
True test will be with my mom when I make her watch that movie, because she's like, Linda Carter is my Wonder Woman. I'm like, do I have a Wonder Woman for you?
her accent and honest, like, her delivery is so good and so honest that they forced all of the other Amazons to match her.
I know, it was great.
How brilliant is that? It's like, we don't want to screw up your timing. We don't want to screw any of this up because it's so good. Let's have the other actors try to mimic the... So Themyscira's accent is now going to be yours.
Yeah.
Like, that's how good you are. We're going to have everybody else match you.
On Themyscira, they actually speak Gadoshan.
Yeah, right. I love it.
All right. So I guess we got to hit our number ones.
Our number ones. And I will start going...
Okay, I'm waiting.
All right, stop. Please stop that now.
With the bucket cut off, right? Christopher Reeve as Superman.
Christopher Reeve as Superman?
The original, the gentle, the kind, the powerful.
I rivaled that one with the other one that I have, but I couldn't do Christopher Reeve because I'd start crying.
You know, he made the world believe a man could fly. He was ahead of his time. It's a funny thing with Christopher Reeve is art imitating art imitating art. They cast him because he looked like the character in the comics, and now all of the characters in the comics are based on Christopher Reeve's look. So it's this cyclical nature. Mm. You know, when you look at Gary Frank in Doomsday Clock, when he's drawing Superman, he's drawing Christopher Reeve.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is true.
There was a no-name actor, a gentleman who was doing soap operas, and he just stands and he smirks a smile, and you're like, oh my god, it's Superman. He's timeless. He's from a different age.
That's the 70s, right?
Yeah, but he feels like he's from like the 1940s, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he just feels like a man out of time. I don't think that there is a better performance to launch all of the superhero movies than his. He's the godfather and playing the godfather of superheroes. So for me, it's no question. It's Christopher Reeve.
Man, I'm not a superhero fan or a Superman fan at all, but listening to that piece,
yeah.
I'm definitely getting like,
I actually thought about it, but like I said, technically he should be the number one that I have as well, but it's Henry Cavill because he's my Superman of this generation. Because Christopher Reeve set the bar, he also took that same bar and took his own spin off it. So I have my modern day Superman who should rightly deserve a second movie, but we won't get into that.
He needs a movie. He needs to be able to do the character at the end of Justice League.
He understood, which was very hard for a couple other Superman actors that I got, the dual role of Clark Kent and Superman are two different people. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Christopher Reeve set the bar and he walked with Christopher Reeve. And to me, that's amazing in its own sense because that dude set the bar and anybody, and like I said, he's in our comics.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for him, I'm like, he's infinity. He's every, it is what it is with Christopher Reeve. So it's, I agree with your point, but I look at Cavill and I'm like, if you can match him, you deserve a spot.
I think that's the argument, is that he's just trying to match him.
Yeah, dueling Superman for top one. Supermans.
So what is your number one then?
Alright, I don't know if this is going to be controversial at all, but my number one superhero performance of all time is Jackie Earl Haley as Rorschach from Watchmen.
Ooh!
I haven't seen that movie. I didn't watch it.
Well, it's on Netflix right now, so if you have the chance, you can go and watch it. But once again, talking about people that steal the movie from it, and especially in a team situation where all these characters are introduced to us at the same time, and he still steals the show.
Yeah.
I scream that all the time at people. I'm not in here with you. You're in here with me.
I will say this fun fact, too. They actually have a couple Watchmen, or at least one that I noticed, in Teen Titans Go, and it's a Rorschach.
Yeah.
Is it Rorschach, too? Mm-hmm. And yeah, he is just, his character, his line delivery, too, like, his just gruff growling and, like, screaming and, like, psychotic nature, like the way he talks in his sentences, you know, cold beans, good as is. You know, his
performance in the mask is great. His performance out of the mask is great.
So good. And he's like two different people almost. And I love, like, and you don't see just his type of character either. He's basically like a far right wing conspiracy theorist. Like, if he were alive today, he'd be like building the wall himself, essentially.
Wow.
And like stealing vaccines out of people's hands. But like,
he's got another one of those like super quotable. And they'll shout, save us. And I'll whisper.
Is that who the question is based off of?
Question? No, he's based off the question.
Okay.
I do that all the time at work when I'm trying to get people's attention. I'll like ask for something and they'll be, then I'll, it's just infinitely quotable. And for me, that's his voice too is perfect. His line delivery. So good.
So thanks, guys. Now I just want to sit at home for like 10 hours and watch a whole freaking slew of movies with these incredible performances.
I'm just saying the DC Universe app. If you've never seen the original Superman, it's on there and you should watch it. Because like I said, Cavill, no one really knows. I don't think anybody really knows Christopher Reeve anymore unless you're like a Superman embedded in comics kind of person.
Or a South Park fan.
Yeah. That was such a terrible rendition of him that I have a hard time watching that episode. It is on there, and that should make the comparison for Henry Cavill ever so present. So,
all right, folks. One. That was a great conversation. Mm-hmm. I was so excited to do this. So.
I know you were. Chomping up a bit there, Matt.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that's it.
I guess let's say bye then.
Bye!